You're listening to episode 98 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, live audio. This last Sunday, I guess, the 4th, the bit by Nick Bilton.
What? You're typing.
Ah, jeez. Last Sunday, there's an article about computer brain interfaces making big leaps.
Nice.
By Nick Bilton on Bits of the New York Times. I was writing down the time, you know.
I gotta
try to timestamp these things. pardon the pun, blew my mind.
Oh man.
It was pretty cool. So I'm just gonna give you a I don't know what to read here. I got two sections I definitely want to read. But apparently they're making some big leaps and bounds in brainy stuff. So two sections here, I guess. The first one is in 2011, scientists working in collaboration with Boston University and ATR Computational Neuroscience Laboratories in Kyoto, Japan, published a paper on a process called decoded neurofeedback, or DECNEF, which sends signals to the brain through a functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, or fMRI, that can alter a person's brain activity pattern. In time, these scientists believe they could teach people how to play a music instrument while they sleep, learn a new language, or master a sport, all by, in quotes, uploading information to the brain.
Or by, quote, controlling their brains with computer technology. I actually have to publish my book, like, this week, because that's, like, a foundational principle of my book. Like, that's part of how it works, which you know, as you are one of the,
if you have
read it.
Yeah, so it's, very interesting. They talked about, too, I don't have a section for this, but they talked about how they had mice where they were able to make them think that they got shocked in one part of the maze instead of a different part.
Yeah.
And so essentially they were like, we implanted memories in them. And they said, we can't create memories yet, but what we can do is we can associate different emotions and feelings with existing memories.
Hmm.
So you have a bad they were talking about like post-traumatic stress syndrome. Like you get a soldier who's like, oh my gosh, it was horrible. They can...
That was patronizing. Oh my gosh, that's horrible.
Well, and then they could just make it so that it, you know, it's not good or bad. It just happened.
Right.
And, you know...
That's cool. That's very cool.
In essence, yeah, cure you of it, I guess, by altering your memory of what... You'll still remember that it happened, and you'll tell people, and they'll be like, oh my word, that's horrible. And you'll be like, I know, whatever. It just is. The other thing that they're working on, and this is a quote by someone I forgot to write down. It says, I think this is the real frontier of human communication in the future. We already can get our monkeys and even humans to move devices just by thinking. He said, once you can write to the brain, I can imagine the same type of logic working for communication where your thoughts and a message will be communicated to another human being and they will be able to understand it.
What did I just say, man? I just said mind control. I wrote a book about psychics where real psychic exists, and then they replicate this stuff with a computer. I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. It terrifies me, mostly because my book is a little bit dystopic, but...
You got to publish it, man.
I know.
Get on it.
The iron is hot and ready for the striking.
But yeah, so I read this and was just like, oh, man, that's amazing. Because at first I was like, you know, if you could control something, you could control your smartphone with your mind. Then I went... No, you don't even need a smartphone. You can just think, and your brain, you know, in some way connected to the internet somehow, right? It connects to the cloud, and the information is just downloaded to you. I just started imagining. You're like, man, you could know, if you will, all of your Facebook friends' updates because you just got some sort of neural alert. Right.
Yeah, that's not going to be bad for us.
Right, or you go down this what could be a scarier path. Imagine like you know, or all of a sudden you're craving McNuggets because McDonald's just like paid for an ad to be embedded in your brain. Just think about that. Just think about that.
See, I was going to go the other direction with it, is when I get that urge for McNuggets at 3 a.m. because I'm up and McNuggets sound fantastic, I can just be like, make that go away. Like, oh, I'm in the mood for celery. Cool.
Weight loss,
which would be awesome.
That would be cool.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, now McDonald's knows I'm craving McNuggets. Do I have to pay an extra like 50 cents in order to turn off that naturally occurring craving electronically? Or are they going to, you know, are they going to be like, no, that's a protected craving. That's part of our market strategy. You can't just turn that off automagically.
Wouldn't it be interesting if they made it so that when you had a, you smelled something, they're just like, you just like go uncontrollable and like, I have to have that. You know, you're like, I'm buying this right now. It'd be interesting.
Well, that's some other sort ones, of what like, happens anyways.
Yeah.
As a formerly fat man.
I had some other ones where it'd be cool to be able to instantly communicate with your loved ones like during or after a disaster. You don't have to try to find a cell phone that is like, we'll just put up temporary poles so that you can all tap in neurologically and, oh, yeah. Oh, he's okay. I know it.
Yeah, well, you'll have like a, oh my gosh. Oh, I just got this like nauseating feeling of like, you've got, because what I'd imagine is going to happen is you'll have like a computer pack that like, you probably have to have something like on your head for at least the first portion. You'll have to have an electrically powered tool. And could you imagine like in a situation where there's
like
a disaster? Yeah, exactly. You're like, you have a disaster and the power pack on one of your loved ones goes out. And so you immediately go like, looking for your girlfriend and go, oh my, she's not there. Just like silence. See, I think about this too much because I've written books about it and I want them to stop. Like, I'd like the history of the world to stop accelerating so fast so that my timeline stays plausible. That'd be really great, guys. Thanks. But yeah, I mean that to me is like, that's that like sickening where they go, you know, you lose contact and, you know, it's all, you know, the moment that it happened, whether they're alive or dead. And that would be, I mean, it'd be nice if you know the moment they're alive, the moment that it happens that they're alive. But at the same time, like, you know, I don't know. It gives you a little bit of that rifting thing that was going on for those of you that saw Pacific Rim, which if you haven't, you should, because I'm about to ruin the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, they quasi mentioned that they successfully were able to do that where they're like, A, they were able to get a human being to wag a rat's tail just by thinking about it.
Which you're
nice. Like, okay, that's weird. But then they were able to say, like, they were able to get two people working together to move a robot's arm.
Oh, man. That's cool. That's fun. Yeah, man. And that's, yeah, they have to bear the neural load, which doesn't make any sense. But from a being able to control.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen it? What the heck? Oh, dude, it's so great. It's such a good movie. It's like, it's not actually a great movie, but it's so dang enjoyable.
I'll probably wait until it comes out on iTunes.
Oh, you're going to have to watch it on the small screen? That half the fun.
What are you talking about? I got 21.5 inches of awesome.
Half of the fun is that the robots are tall as skyscrapers, but whatever. All right.
I'll see. You know what? I'm supposed to take Jesse out on a date tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll turn it into a movie.
Pack rim, dude. No, that's very cool. That's a cool technology, and it's interesting, kind of knowing how all these different things work. And it's sort of like a computer, how a computer is developed, in that there are different technologies used for different things. It's like making a rat wag its tail versus reading a human's brain, or like completely separate technologies. It's not like it's not like your brain can. We get those like readers that can like sense certain lobes of your brain light up, and so when that lobe lights up, it tells the computer, hey, this lobe is lighting up, and then that goes into a computer. The computer then says, when that happens, go take over this piece of take over this tool, and that tool is a package of wires that are, you know, medically inserted into a rat's brain. Part of one anode goes into a node of the brain that controls the tail wagging. So it's like when you think of this, like you think a little, you know, of something, and it triggers a, you know, and but it's like it's not hard to see how as that gets, you know, better and better resolution and more sophisticated, that you would get even better and better and better at doing that, and eventually, you know, get to the point where, yeah, you can actually control stuff. And one of my dreams has always been to be able to control a army of rats, because we've long known that it's been like
I didn't
a
know
decade.
That was a dream of yours.
Oh yeah, no, this is awesome. It's like
sounds like another book in the working.
Exactly. So what they do is they take these, like, they implant these little pressure sensors onto, or these little electrodes into rats' brains, where one.
Wait, what movie was this? Where was it? I know it. It's a cartoon about a kid who goes into the future. It's got the bowler hat guy.
Oh,
what is that?
Meet the Robinsons?
Meet the Robinsons! Yeah! And the guy's controlling all sorts of animals and stuff. The frogs.
Exactly. So basically what they've been able to do is they've been able to create these rats, or they create these little interfaces on rats that there's three anodes. One is a pleasure sensor that they're trained to go forward when you hit the pleasure sensor.
Ah.
One is their left whiskers, and one is their right whiskers. And so what you do is you make them go forward, and then when you hit the left whiskers, since they move with the feel of the whiskers, when you hit the left ones, it causes them to go right.
Oh, right.
And when you hit the right ones, it causes them to go left.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so you can turn them.
Yeah, you can control
That's
them. Like,
kind
and
of
they,
awesome.
Yeah, I would say they created – this is like a decade ago. They created these little remote control.
If they got
rats.
Rat races, that would be
Yeah, one second.
Awesome.
My phone is being obnoxious.
Actually,
I'll be right back.
No, that's cool.
One second.
Man, that'd be so much fun. That would be very cool.
Okay.
Then all of a sudden my personal blog, Outside the Rat Race, would be like totally meaningful.
Exactly.
Because that'd be a story, right? You got a rat who's got to get out.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
and so, but
break the mental mind game.
So it's always been a dream of mine to get like 1,000 of these rats, like that you could just like feed and like keep as pets, and then like have a computer that can like
so
coordinate
gross.
Them all. And so you can think of it as like a real time strategy thing. You can
yes.
think go over there or go over there. And there was a time where people really wanted to use, like, they wanted to develop this technology because rats can jump like crazy far, and when you light up their pressure sensor, they can climb up scaffolding. They can, if they can get their nails
wow.
in at all, they can like climb upside down. Like, they're crazy good when, because they're just
yeah, but they're rats. We know that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Well, but I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'll figure out something to do with them. Maybe put little explosives on them. I don't know. They're, you know,
kamikaze rats.
Exactly, dude. A kamikaze mind remote controlled rats.
That sounds so dangerous.
It sounds awesome.
Man, just get one of those. I was going to say that would be an easy way to do a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
But you know what?
The NSA listens to this
broadcast on the internet.
Yeah.
I will not do that.
I will not advocate.
I think that is a good idea.
Terrorism. Oh,
I will admit, though, I did think of it. But come on, it's obvious.
Yeah.
Okay, I think it's a bad idea. Rats,
there we go.
Explosives and mind control. Bad idea. I know nothing about it.
That's so funny. Yeah, so I don't know. It's cool, though. That's a very cool – that's a cool – it's cool that they keep making incremental improvements.
Yeah,
and that's the thing,
yeah.
is that it makes really good fodder for bloggers, which is ironic that I'd make fun of bloggers with my condescending tone. But it's at the same time, it's, you know, they're making improvements, they're taking steps forwards, and they're figuring it out. And eventually what you're going to find is it's going to be like the touch screens. Is you're going to finally get the technology for touch screens is going to get good enough, and somebody's going to come up with a good enough solution to use or reason
yes.
to use it, and all of a sudden there's going to be an explosion of, wow, we can control stuff with our minds, and all of this foundational computer science, neuroscience, you know, imaging science, whatever, all this different science is suddenly going to find its way into engineers, you know, hands, and they're going to be like, oh, this is why you were developing all this. Very cool. And
yeah, you'll probably find it's like smartphones where you get a few toe dips into the water, and then all of a sudden you just have this step
avalanche,
function
yeah.
change, which then leads to even more change, you know, to accelerating growth to where you go, wow, mm-hmm. these are awesome. Yeah, I just hope that it's like only 20 years away instead of 50 years away.
I bet it's and I actually don't think it's unreasonable that just the thing, you know, knowing what progress they've made in 10 years, It's not crazy to think that 20 years is too long.
Well, and yeah, because part of the help is now that computers are getting faster, smaller, whatever, they're able to analyze the data a lot quicker. They're able to collect more data and solve problems faster.
And a lot of it is, I mean, to go back to, you know, if all y'all remember Spider-Man 2 with Dr. Octopus and his robotic arms. You know, part of the principle was that he would control the robotic arms with his, you know, with his brainstem, and the little inhibitor chip prevented the robots from taking over his
brain. Which didn't work well at all when it got electrocuted.
Exactly. And quite the stupid premise for a movie, although it is a fantastic movie. But the idea there, and I remember talking to guys that were working in the field of prosthetics, and they're like, that would be so difficult to do because, you know, each one of those joints would take mental power and take so much training. Yeah, theoretically, you could train yourself to use them over time, but... You know, it's not practical to have that many joints. And I was like, why wouldn't he? He wasn't controlling the joints.
He just gave them a mission, just like on the rats, right? You don't tell them how to walk. You just give little directions, and they take care of all the minor motor functions.
And that's what we're getting better at, and that's what computer technology is allowing us to get further at. It's taking, you know, and really and truly, that's the beauty of the touchscreen. It's not that it's a very sensitive touchscreen, but it's the real trick is that it is it's how they use the blurry information they get to give a very specific reaction.
Well, and even then then they take the next step and they give developers an API. So all the developer has to do is go, oh, they touch it, you know, or it's a swipe, left, swipe, right. And that's the extent of the input that they need to worry about. And then they just give the output directions. And, and Apple is kind of taken care of, or whoever, I choose Apple because that's who I use, takes care of all that dirty work. That's very cool. I'm excited for it. And I think there's some cool research happening there.
Right. Definitely. Very cool. Very, very cool. So anyways, up next, we don't talk about lawsuits very often here because they're kind of boring, but this week was kind of an exciting one. It's been coming up a lot, and the Obama administration got involved with trade negotiations this week by dropping a veto on the whole, an explosive, you know, the equivalent of a nuclear bomb on the whole process, and just kind of put an end to it. It piqued my interest enough that I actually dug into it, and I want to talk about it for a little bit. So, have you been following it at all, the whole ITC thing?
I do know that they won some sort of case that was supposed to ban Apple, and at the last second or last day or whatever, Obama vetoed the ban on iPhones or the older iPhones or something.
Exactly. So basically what happened was the International Trade Commission, the US ITC, is an organization that they have their own court system, but they're designed to allow. So as these companies come back and forth on different patents and whatnot, they go through different courts system, you know, court stuff, suing each other, blah 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 blah. Well, Samsung had developed a patent that was industry, it was part of an industry standard. So basically, in order for different phones to be able to communicate with each other, they use different technologies. Those technologies are patented, and those patents have to be given at what is called a FRAND, or a fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory rate, which essentially says that a company like Samsung can't give HTC a really good rate on that patent and give Apple a really terrible rate with this expressed mission of being unfair, unreasonable, or discriminatory towards Apple. And there was a patent that Samsung owned, and they were giving it at a fair and reasonable rate to a bunch of different companies, and they weren't giving it to Apple, giving that same rate to Apple. They basically wanted... I think it was like 2.5% of every iPhone sale to be given on that. Well, the thing is that Apple came back and was like, we're not going to pay a dollar more than per phone on that, which is significantly less than 2.5% on every phone. And so it started this, started these negotiations, and it just wasn't going anywhere. And Apple, every time they came together, Apple was pretty belligerent, and Samsung pretended like they wanted to be. It's interesting, depending on what article you read. In some cases, Apple was completely in the right, and they were like, no, it was fair and it was unreasonable, and they shouldn't have been negotiating with Samsung to try to figure out what's less unfair and what's less discriminatory. It should be non-discriminatory. On the other hand, everybody's like, Apple was completely belligerent, and they wanted better terms than everybody else because they were older phones, and it was a dying technology. And so it was like it basically went back and forth. And what eventually happened was Samsung couldn't settle this, and so what they decided was, well, if we can't settle it, we don't want you to be able to sell your phone. That's the next step after you can't work it out in the courts and everything. Except they kind of skipped a step, which was fully working it out in the courts. They immediately went to the International Trade Commission, the USITC, and said the phones are made in China. And they use unlicensed patented technology of ours. So we would like you to prevent those phones from being brought into the United States. And the Trade Commission, in a 4-1 decision, said, well, yeah, that's reasonable. You have the patent. You haven't come to a
conclusion. That's reasonable.
Yeah. You haven't come to an agreement. Apple's not paying you. And so, yeah, you're not going to let these guys... we're not going to let Apple import these phones. Well, it happened to be all older phones like iPhone 3G, 3GS, and the 4. The one problem is that the 4 is still one of the best-selling phones in the world, and it's a great-selling phone in America. And it would be bad news for Apple if that were to happen. And
which is exactly what Samsung wants.
Exactly. That's the whole point of them pursuing this. And
which is all kind of funny because Samsung actually like makes products for the phones.
I know.
But anyways, that's the whole frenemies thing.
Exactly. Well, it's a different division. So eventually it came to the last day and everybody was like, oh my goodness, are they going to ban the iPhone 4 imports into America? Does that mean that's like going to be the end of the iPhone 4 reserve? Like, what's going to happen? And getting a bit of a distraction. And so the iPhone 4, where was I? Oh, that's so irritating.
Is it going to get banned for reals?
Thank you. Is it going to get banned for reals? And then what's his name? President Obama basically came in the last moment and said, no, we're going to veto it. We're not going to ban the iPhone from being sold from being imported into America. You guys can't do that. And so
everybody's
like,
let's be reasonable
here. Yeah, exactly. And hey, there's a lot of people trying to be reasonable with each other, and everybody seems to think that what's reasonable is unreasonable or vice versa.
I know. And, I love it.
I know, it's great. It's actually kind of an exciting little kerflumple that's going on right now.
These two, man, this is better than the Microsoft Google.
I know, dude. They're so vicious. And it was the best part about this is like this all kind of settled. It came down, and then immediately Apple went to the ITC and was like, "We'd like to ban Samsung imports." And
yes!
ITC's following up by saying, "Yeah, we're gonna ban some of the Galaxy phones as well." Yeah, it's just like, what the heck? Oh my gosh!
It's going for the
jugular, man. Oh, jeez, they're just
Gonna work out. But man, it's just. Funny.
I know, there's no, but what's really fascinating about this, and this is how this gets bigger, because basically what's happening is there was a 4-1, it was a 4-1 decision, and the dissent's decision was pretty interesting, and basically...
Hold on a sec.
There's nothing going on, do-do-do,
go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so number one, the patent part and only a tiny part of the international standard, and as such, Samsung had agreed to make it available for licensing under terms that are fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory. So that's fact number one. Fact number two, Samsung made no effort to demonstrate that the licensing terms it offered Apple satisfied an objective standard of reasonableness. Essentially, they didn't go to court.
Oh, okay.
The only time Samsung made such an offer is in an oral discussion in December 2012. It came with strings attached, which Apple could not agree to. Those strings are blacked out in the document, but Pinkerton adds in the text sentence, "It is neither fair nor non-discriminatory for the holder of the Frand encumbered patent to require license to non-Frand encumbered patents as a condition for licensing its patents." Essentially, what he was saying is, and this is all redacted, so nobody really knows, but essentially what people are saying is, what they think happened wasn't that Samsung wanted more money, is it said, we want $2.5 or 2.5% or $1 per phone. But if we go with $1 per phone, we also want licensings to your non-standards essential patents. We essentially want the keys to the iPhone castle. We want to end the lawsuits on everything. And Apple said, no,
wow.
go pound sand. And, and so they just like, that's what happened there. And everybody's like, and everybody's reading the dissent going, that is actually a very well worded dissent. And basically in order to approve of the ban, the four they're smart dudes. They're all incredibly smart. They're well liked. And basically, and the fact that it went 4-1 and this guy made this reasonable of an argument, everybody was like, you know, maybe you'd get one or two people to agree that there should be a Samsung ban, but all four, it just seems crazy. And so what the leading theory is, so that's like the foundation of what happened. So now the question is, now we're moving forward, what happened with the veto? And basically what the running theory is that that they think that most of the ITC count, the commission, if not the entire commission, agreed with the dissent. The problem was that if they all agreed. They all agreed, but the problem was is that if they made it at the court, then Samsung would keep coming back to them saying, come on, like let's try this angle, let's try it that angle. And so basically what they said is they wanted somebody with more authority to make that decision. So essentially they came together and said, let's make Obama make this decision. And that's when they came together and they approved it, which kicked it up to the next level, which is the final level, which is the Obama administration. And so at the last minute, the only way to actually cancel the ban was for Obama to veto it, which is essentially him saying, Samsung, if you don't like what's going on, take them to court. Don't try to get them banned in the country. So now Apple's flexing their wings and seeing, well, you know, does this go both ways or do we get special treatment because we're Apple and because we're American, made in Cupertino, you know, and we put that on our phones. Does that count for anything? Which the answer is probably
there's
no.
There's got to be so much other politics going on behind the scenes here that we'll never see.
Money has got to be flying around in amounts that would make your head spin if you knew how much money people were making off of, like, lobbyists,
and lawyers,
and
they're sitting there
and politicians.
Being like, you know, we're going to start making the Mac here in the U.S. You know, I just – wow.
Yeah.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, it's
fast. So
I mean,
cool.
I'm gonna say that it's funny once it kind of moves out of the courtrooms, because lawyerly stuff can. I think if you get somebody who's a really articulate and understands law, it can be really fascinating. I'm not that person. What makes this as exciting is that it's like clearly moved beyond the realm of. It's moved into politics, which, although completely unqualified to talk about it, I feel less unqualified to talk about it. So I'm
Yeah, what's super interesting too is like you can tell that, or at least you get the feeling that at the end of this, for this particular thing, no phone will get banned and no real change will happen, but it'll be somewhere else,
right?
Where some deal will have been reached where it makes this all okay.
Yeah, and that's essentially what everybody's saying is the general trend is that the patents have gotten out of control. That there's clearly something wrong and nobody's figured out what to do next, or nobody's decided to pick up the banner and spearhead the trying to fix the problem. But it's starting to get nutty where it's like they're trying to ban each other's phones over patent issues outside of patent courts. And it's like, that's the whole point of the patent court. And if you're going to circumvent that, then what are we even doing here now? And So I don't know. It's interesting, you know. And nobody's the good guy here. Everybody's doing it to everybody. I mean, you know, even with Google, like, even Google is getting down and down and ugly in this sort of a. Well, and essentially, their biggest problem has always been that if they don't like it, they just ignore it. And